Welcome to Moneyline. This is Matt McCullough. Thanks for joining me today. Today we have a very special show for you. One of my favorites in the industry. And, you know, it's always good to learn from the people. But Ryan Dietrich from LPL Financial, I have him on for the next 25 to 30 minutes. And I got to tell you, this is one of the best interviews. We're going to talk about the election. We're going to talk about buying into pullbacks, sectors that he loves. He happens to love biotech like I do. This is one of the smartest guys in the business. You cannot miss this coming up right now on Moneyline.
The buck starts here. Moneyline with Matt McCall.
As you just mentioned, Ryan Dietrich here, Chief Market Strategist, LPL Financial, joins us. Ryan, thank you so much for coming on. You know, I've been bugging the hell out of you trying to get you on here, but thanks for joining us here today.
Oh, you're very welcome. Sometimes it's hard to get a hold of me. I'm always getting pulled a lot of ways, but I wanted to do this. I mean, I know you reached out a while ago, so we're here now, and hopefully we'll have some fun over the next several. However long we talk, we'll do it, man. I'm looking forward to it. So thank you for the invite.
Yeah, my pleasure. Yeah, we have a lot to talk about, and tonight is actually a pretty big night because we have the first presidential debate. Which to me, I mean, I'm getting my popcorn ready. This is must see TV, and it's going to maybe tell a lot about where the market believes we're going to go with whoever wins, but. You know, we're going to talk about the election in a moment. Let's get to that. But before we get into it, let's talk about where we are with the market right now. You know, we had the fastest bear market ever. Then we rallied over 50%. And we've been kind of going sideways here for a little bit. What's your view basically just on the overall market right now?
Yeah, Matt, I mean, I guess it's just been a historic ride, right? I'm saying that we all know that. Fastest bear market, 34% correction in about 6 weeks. Fastest 30% correction ever. And now one of the fastest bounce backs ever. And it's like, you know, we're all kind of catching our breath wondering, well, what now? What now? And honestly, at LPL Research, you know, we've been bullish, right? We've felt this market has legs. It's just there's so much skepticism and negativity, in my opinion, still out there. And yes, we've got the election. Yes, we clearly have COVID. You've got more cases coming out of Europe, potentially more coming in the U.S. So all these uncertainties. But what do we know? I mean, we know that we're going to get a vaccine pretty soon. We know we're going to get some major therapeutics. The economy is going to continue to open up. But this isn't just a U.S. theme. This is a global theme. We're looking at over 20% earnings growth in the U.S., developed markets, in China. I mean, all these places next year are looking really strong. And I know when you see the headlines, all the terrible things that are happening, it's so hard for the average investor to kind of differentiate between the two. But the truth of the matter is this. I'll just sum it up with this. S&P up 5 months in a row, okay? That's a pretty long win streak, last I checked. I went back to World War II. 1 year after 5 month win streaks, the S&P was higher a year later, 25 out of 26 times. So some pretty solid performance there. So it's kind of one of those, it is what it is. What did Newton tell us, right? An object in motion stays in motion unless something knocks it out of the way. Now, trust me, 2020, there's lots of things that could knock it out of the way. But when you hear that type of thing, strength begets strength. And we've been saying for a while at LPL, what we're seeing in April, May, and June is not consistent with a bear market rally. As strange as it sounds, it's consistent with the start of a new bull market. And that's kind of where we think we are. And, you know, we think there's higher prices are still the way to continue to go the next 6 to 12 months at least.
Maybe that's one of the reasons I love following you on Twitter, because you drive with me, because I'm an optimist in general in life, too. And if you turn on the mainstream financial media, you know, 9 out of 10 times is negative. You know, you're in the mainstream media a lot. I used to be in the media, and, you know, fear sells. So that a lot of times that's why we're going to see that versus saying, oh, we had an okay day today. Dow's up 100 points. That doesn't sell. It has to be something out there to get people a reason to watch. But let's talk a little bit about you mentioned earnings, and you know, one of your slides you sent over, and we're going to share all these slides with everybody on here, is it looks at earnings expectations. You said it says earnings are expected to surge in 2021. And what I found interesting was you broke it down in the United States, developed, international, emerging markets, mm-hmm. all over 20%, which makes sense after a rough 2020. But what of the three, the U.S. is the weakest. Do you see a lot of opportunity over there? And number one is developed international, which I assume is a lot of European countries. Yep. Do you see a lot of opportunity over there right now?
Yeah, you know, you mentioned being an optimist. Before I go there, I am a Cincinnati Bengals fan, and every Sunday at 1 o'clock Eastern time, I actually think they're going to win. And you'd think after doing that for 30-some years, I would realize they're just not going to win. But
well, I need to cut you off for a second here, Ryan. I will tell you, because I am a diehard Philadelphia Eagles fan. So
oh my goodness.
Just played to the most ridiculous tie. And not to put down your Bengals, but Doug Peterson didn't try to kick a 64-yard field goal to win it, I said, we've come to the point in our franchise history where it's okay to tie the Bengals at home. And that's how I felt.
It was like two dumpster trucks just smashing into each other in that game. I said, terrible. No one deserved to win that game. It was,
everyone walked away a loser.
That's the way it should have been. So what were we talking about? Now you got me all fired up. When we look at developed markets, there are some major positives going on in Europe with kind of some of the economic data that we've been seeing. Now they've got the cases spiking higher, but really in the developed world, what we like at LPO Research, we really like Japan. I mean, there's some growth coming out of Japan. The Nikkei has gone nowhere for 30 years. I've got a CMT that's chartered market technician, like look at chart patterns. To us, the surprise in the developed world, the next 18 months or so, very likely could be Japan. And I'm sorry, the developed international world, I should say. And that's an area that we do like. When it comes to emerging markets, we're overweight emerging markets relative to developed international still. We think the U.S. dollars, I know it's popped a little bit lately. The U.S. dollar has some tailwinds that are going to push it lower. There's still more growth coming out of emerging markets. And I don't know, I guess you still consider China an emerging market, but it sure feels like something different than that. And that's what started all this trouble. And no one trusts the Chinese data. I get it. But a lot of these big Chinese stocks, and what did Hyatt just say? Hyatt said, there's more people in hotels in China now than there were back in September. Okay, so they're coming back. So we like emerging markets. We like the U.S. We put developed international below that a little bit, but with a tilt toward Japan as a potential wild card to outperform potentially everybody, honestly, next year.
So when you mentioned emerging markets, you brought up, China's still in that basket, technically, even though it's the second largest economy in the world. Within the emerging markets, are there other areas outside of China, Southeast Asia, Africa, Latin America, that you're looking at as potential outperformer?
Yeah, we like the Asian markets more so than Latin America, just because the COVID issues that we've seen in Latin America. So we'd stick more with the Asian parts of emerging markets, which are doing well. And I'm not, we don't have a real opinion on frontier markets, things like Kuwait, for instance, and areas that are really small. But just on a relative strength basis, frontier markets are quietly really doing well here. And it's just hard for me big picture to think that that's a bearish signal. I mean, copper was at 2-year highs not too long ago. That's hard to think that's a bearish signal for the global economy when risk assets and risk appetite is there. Now, I know tech, we can get into tech and stuff. Tech's really stretched. It pulled back, rightfully so. But again, it just is still these positives that are out there globally when you look. Are you willing to listen? And if you look around, there are a lot of good-looking chart patterns and good-looking fundamentals that are coming back. And when frontier markets are doing well, that's not a bearish event, in my opinion.
That's a great point, because there's so many underlying chart patterns out there that I think, again, the mainstream media doesn't focus on that shows underlying strength. They just look at kind of the big picture numbers and they don't actually delve down where, anything in life, it's what's underneath at the base of what's being built. And I agree with you with all that stuff. And you mentioned tech, and one of your slides you sent over, the title is Tech Deserves a Top Spot. Yeah. And it shows how the tech sector earnings estimates are above their pre-pandemic peak. When you look at the rest of it, it's still down. I agree with you. I think tech stocks were overextended, but, things can be overextended for weeks, months, a quarter. I mean, you could go out, you didn't know when the pullback was going to happen. Do you view this recent pullback in some of the big tech names as an opportunity looking at the potential for earnings to grow into next year?
Yeah, Matt, we sure do. I mean, the NASDAQ 100 was 30% above its 200-day moving average. That's a really geeky way of saying stocks, that rubber band was really, really stretched. At LPL Research, right, we manage a lot of money for our advisors, and we've been overweight growth. We've had some tech exposure. So we were waiting for this eventual pullback, and now it's happened. And now we're looking at it as an opportunity, because you talk about earnings again. I mean, like the slide shows, the earnings actually have increased for tech from pre-pandemic levels. Not too many sectors can say that. Earnings should grow about 5% approximately in 2020 for tech, which is a positive thing. But you think about like Michael Jordan, right? We all watched The Last Dance a while back. How many games did the Bulls win? Like 84 to 82, and Jordan had like 45 points. A lot of them. It was amazing how many close games they had, but he scored all the points. You want your all-stars to do well when it matters. Everyone's been complaining because tech and healthcare are these two big conglomerates that are just doing so well. Well, they were the two that stepped up this most recent earnings season. And we think they're going to continue to step up on earnings seasons because that's what we've been seeing. And it's in this low growth, low inflation, low rates world, what tends to do better under that scenario? is growth. People reach for growth. So we think this is, we think the recession's over. We think the economy's growing, but it's not going to be rip-roaring growing. Kind of hard to say. Rip-roaring growing. Hard to say. Anyway. But anyway, I'm a Bengals fan. What can you say? But nonetheless, it's, you know, that's the areas that we still think you want to be a little bit overweight. And then on the value side of things, the cyclical values, your materials and industrials, those are the ones, if you do like a barbell approach, that might be some of the areas that if the globe opens up more and the economy really perks up, those can do better. But we still think stick with who brought you to the dance. And that's your communications, your tech, and your healthcare, specifically tech in general. That's where the earnings are still coming.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more. I was reading a report this morning at JP Morgan, and they said they can see the S&P going to about 3750 by mid next year, which is about 10% or so from here, which isn't a crazy call one way or the other. But other than tech and healthcare, they mentioned what you just talked about was industrials and construction materials, which they talked about. And they also went on to say earnings are more important in the election. And again, I actually, it's very rare I agree with some of these really big firms out there, but it actually all made sense. But I thought, you know, I'd like to get your view on the industrials, construction materials. You know, obviously home, the home builders are doing fantastic. I mean, yeah. I just bought a condo in, I moved to Baltimore about a year and a half ago. I bought a condo in December in a brand new place, looking to get something bigger now. And I went to look at a place this weekend, Ryan. Called the realtor. It wasn't even listed yet. Somebody bought it sight unseen, never listed. I mean, it almost scares me like we're in a bubble, but I got to tell you, with mortgage rates so low, I see more upside for these industrials and construction materials. And if we get an infrastructure bill, which eventually we're going to, it seems like a really nice place to diversify away from tech.
No, we think so. I mean, and you hear that people are buying things without looking at it. The scare of, you know, 2006, 2007 starts to come in the back of my head. But we don't think that's the case. I mean, you know, if you think about those areas, as the economy comes back, those will do well. But you know, I want to take a different shift on this for a second. You know, look at credit spreads, right? Investment grade spreads, high yield spreads. If there was truly a monster under the bed, those spreads will be blowing out. They're not. You look at the scene of the crime, some of the industries, your cruises and your airlines and areas like that. What are those credit spreads doing? They're staying really calm. They're in fact, increasingly going lower. That's, again, if you think the bond market's the smartest guys in the room, and I'm kind of wishy-washy on that, but back in February and March, the bond market knew there was something wrong. They gave the warning sign and the equity guys ignored it. Now the bond market's not sending any major issues to us right now. When you look at, again, the scene of the crime, the people that got the most impacted by this, and those, again, are positive things. You talk about housing, I mean, 14-year high in new home sales, 14-year high in existing home sales. Housing stocks in general have done well. The biggest thing you can buy is a house, okay? Consumer discretionary sector continues to look really good. It's strong. It's not one of our favorite groups, but I like seeing it lead. The biggest thing you can buy is a house or an apartment in your case, and it just shows a lot of confidence. Speaking of confidence, how about that consumer confidence number today? My goodness, over 100, expected to be way below that. That was honestly shocking to me, but the consumer, last I checked, makes up 2/3 of the economy. We know the economy is not great, but boy, it does seem like things are coming back a lot faster than most people expected. And that just is going to help continue to drive this. The average expansion is 5 years, right? The average, there's no such thing as average, but the average expansion is 5 years. This one's like maybe 2 months old. I mean, you know, I don't know. We're still in a recession. Technically, we think it is over probably. Yep. But we could have a lot longer to go. And that's one of the big things your average investor probably didn't quite realize here, that this expansion, it could last for years. And this bull market honestly could last for years as well. Cause it was just born. We just made new highs not that long ago.
You know, I love to hear this because, you know, what I've been trying to sell my team on, and it probably started end of 2019. I was looking at the 20s, what I'm basically calling the roaring 2020s, is you go back from 82 to 90, you had a great bull market, and everybody thought it was over in 90. I went back and looked at all the headlines, all the big name guys back then were calling for the market to be over, that the 90s were going to be kind of a dead, you know, decade. We had a quick recession in early 90, and then boom, we took off in one of the best decades ever, right? Why can't we have the same thing here? Basically 10 years, take a bit of a breather and have another 8 to 10 years of the upside. I mean, to me, if the earnings continue to grow, as I believe they will, especially with all the convergences of all these technologies coming together, this is something that could, but you're going to hear, Ryan, everybody say, well, we've gone too much too fast. We've gone up too much. That is, you know, bear market doesn't die of old age. I see this going. This is something where obviously we'll have corrections. We're going to have bear markets. We're going to have recessions in the next 10 years. But I think it's something where you can be in the best sectors, the best stocks, and ride us for another 8 to 10 years.
Listen, small caps have made new highs for a couple of years. I know that we all know what's up. The big cap tech are the ones that are up the most. Or they were coming back to earth. But when you haven't made new highs in small caps for 2 years, that's hard to say that this market is extremely overbought. And yeah, just real quick, I love the seven-year itch story. If you think about it, the bull market in 1950, that's when the bull market started, 1950. 7 years in was 1957. There was a bear market. There was a recession. Everyone thought it was over. Kept going up to 1966. In my opinion, the bull market didn't start in 82. It started in 1980. That's when the S&P made new all-time highs. If you do the math, from 1980 to add 7 years, you get 87, okay? We know that that cycle continued to go higher. In my opinion, this bull, the most recent bull market, didn't start in 2009. It started in 2013. That's when we broke out to new highs. You add 7 years to 2013, you get 2020. History doesn't repeat, but it rhymes, Mark Twain told us. Every 7 years, there's a recession or a bear market. Happened once again, big time this time. But that doesn't mean the cycle's over. This secular bull market that really started back in 2013 very well still could have, you know, a good ways to go, I guess, is what I want to say.
I love that. I love hearing that. That 7 year, I didn't really think about that. You know, I started reading charts too back in the day. And you know, I look at it in like these 16 to 18 year cycles, like the 66. Yeah. I use 82, you know, 82 right. to 2000, 2000, yeah. 2013, right. and breakout. You know, but very similar. We're seeing the same thing. So, Ryan, let's go back to the consumer here for a moment, because we have the checking deposits at an all-time high, savings deposits at an all-time high, net worth of individuals and nonprofits all-time high. And when we're talking highs of checking, I mean, they're up 50% about, give or take, this year. We're seeing, what, $3.4 trillion. So when things get back to normal and I can go back to a bar and actually sit there next to somebody without a face mask and I can go buy and travel again, holy smokes, I'm going to spend, and I assume everybody else will as well.
Yeah, you're right. And you're one of the more amazing things, I think. I mean, those stats you just mentioned are amazing. We know some of that in all likelihood is due to the CARES Act, giving people more money. But what shocked me was what's going on with credit card debt. I assumed in a recession, credit card debt goes up. That's normally what happens. Credit card debt has soared down. Okay, that's a really good thing that people are getting extra money and not just blindly going out and just buying new cars and stuff with it. They're actually paying off some debt. So we're in really good shape heading into the vicious recession we just had. But there are some real things to say, you know, balance sheets and things aren't too bad going into it. We were talking about cycles for a little bit ago, and I just want to point this out. The U.S. dollar, talk about these big cycles, U.S. dollar had a major peak in 1985, and then went lower for like 8 years, okay? Had a major peak in 2001, but lower for like 8 years. We just had another peak 16 years later in 2017, and here we are. So every 16 years, there's a major peak. And now we think, again, the U.S. dollar goes a little bit lower. That could be another tailwind potentially for consumers, as it kind of helps kind of the way they want to spend their money.
Yep. Yeah, and it helps. I mean, as a country, it helps us with exports. You know, so that's
absolutely.
And we're such a big export country. So you do have a slide in here that talks about the U.S. dollar predicting the outcome of the election, right? Let me see if I find this here. I don't know where I put it, but oh, here it is. Can the U.S. dollar predict a winner? And it looks like here. So if the dollar is down, it's not good for the incumbent. And it sounds like you think it could continue. It's about break even right now, right? Down just slightly. How do you see that playing in?
Yeah, I mean, you think about it. Back in March, what happened? The only thing that went up was the dollar. Gold got killed. Bonds got killed. Stocks got absolutely annihilated. And sure enough, right now, we think that's one of those subtle things that investors should be watching. Because 3 months before the election, that's when that clock starts. And if the U.S. dollar is weak, that's potentially a tailwind for President Trump to win. If the U.S. dollar is strong, it says maybe something's wrong, and that could benefit Joe Biden. So yeah, our bigger structural call is for the dollar to be lower, you know, this time next year, this time 2-3 years from now. But if the dollar's higher between now and November 3rd, that definitely could be the market's way of giving a little subtle, hey, this isn't, you know, Joe Biden might win. And think about it also. I mean, I sent you one for stocks, too. It's very similar to stocks. If stocks are up or down 3 months before the election, stocks have usually been right 20 out of 23 times going back to the Great Depression. If they're higher, incumbent party wins. If they're lower, incumbent party loses. It's, you know, relatively simple. But at the same time, really powerful. In 2016, everyone thought Hillary Clinton was going to win. Not the stock market. Dow was down 9 days in a row directly ahead of that election.
Yeah.
And copper, the industrial metal play of President Trump's infrastructure plan, copper was up a record 14 days in a row ahead of 2016. So the copper and stock market did not buy what everyone was selling with Hillary Clinton winning. And right now we think things are much, much closer to what the polls are saying, where they say, you know, Biden's comfortably ahead. We think it's much more like a coin toss when you look at some of these intermarket analysis things.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking right now. If we go back 3 months prior to November 3rd, as of just a minute before we jumped on here, I think the S&P is up 1.4%. Right. So, I mean, it's close. Yep. Obviously, that could change. But that gives President Trump, the incumbent, a bit of a lead there. People tell me that Biden's a shoo-in. I said, were you not alive in 2016? I mean, come on now. I mean, this is that there's that silent majority out there, or not majority, the silent potential voters out there. And to me, it is a coin toss. And I saw a very really odd number the other day. Augur, which is an altcoin that we follow, it's a predictions market. And they have it basically at a coin toss. And this is a decentralized, like, there's people out there betting real money on this. And that's going to be smart people. And it has it at a coin toss. So I agree with you. It's going to come down. My one concern is that it's going to be contested, which I think it's going to be either way. And the market hates one thing, unknowns. If we don't know who the damn president is, if it is, we could figure it out and invest accordingly. But, you know, another one that I loved here, Ryan, was a chart that you called the calendar warnings. And it shows basically performance from 1950 through now during election years. And just how basically from, it looks like the middle end of September down through October, and we bottom kind of right before the election. Do you kind of see that happening again this year where we kind of really choppy into the election night?
Yeah, we wouldn't be surprised by that. I mean, that's history, right? History says you tend to get a little bit of weakness ahead of an election. October, during an election year, Matt, is actually the worst month of the year on average. And again, this is one of those things. If we get a strong October and buck the trend, so to speak, that, again, is maybe Mr. Market's way of suggesting that President Trump has a much better chance than people think. But, I mean, if there's anything about 2020, I don't have a clue what's going to happen next. This year has just blown up just about everything we've all thought. But the book is for a little weakness, then the election's over and you rally. One other thing about, you know, President Trump wins, if Vice President Biden wins. When President Trump won in 2016, everyone said tech stocks would do poorly. He's going to go after them. Financial, steel, and coal were going to do great. Okay, 4 years later, last I checked, the exact opposite happened. So, yes, we're all these talking heads, and you and I talk about this stuff. Oh, this will happen. Trust me, it's not that simple. The bottom line is if you're not in a recession, which whoever wins this election, they're going to have a pretty good economy, okay? Things are really improving here, opening up. That's much more beneficial for how the stock market is going to do if the economy is expanding, not in a recession, than kind of who's in the White House is the honest truth.
You know, I can't agree with you more because, you know, I get asked this question every day, just like you do. You know, who's going to win? How's it going to affect the market, right? Should we buy now? Should we wait till after the election? And honestly, none of us know. We give our best educated guess as to it. And my best educated guess is basically, you know, we're going to have volatility. I mean, I'm playing both sides here. We're going to have volatility. But I think we're going to, between now and the end of November, we're going to have probably one pullback, whether it lasts a day or a month, I don't know. But I'm going to use all weakness to buy for clients into this market. And I saw... I like to bring up the big guys because not the LPO is not big. LPO is huge. I love you guys. But like Goldman came out and, you know, they're still bullish, believe it or not. But I think they changed their tune depending on where the wind blows, you know, what's going on. Yeah. But they came out and they said Biden, you know, regardless if Biden wins, they're still bullish because he's going to has his fiscal expansion plan is for $5.4 trillion. So it kind of takes away increased taxes when you're spending $5.4 trillion in the economy. I mean, that's so to me, I agree. Like, I don't really care who wins, honestly, as far as my business is concerned, because I think whoever wins, they're going to get a good economy and both are going to spend and it's going to be good for stocks.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, one of the concerns is a potential blue wave. If Biden wins and they take both chambers of the House, what happens next? And could there be the tax corporate taxes from 21% all the way to 28%, maybe even more? In history, looking back, these are just the numbers. I mean, stocks have been higher every single time when you have a blue wave like that since 1977. I mean, usually Democrats in power and both chambers of Congress, stocks do just fine. And also when they're split, I mean, that's the thing, right? We had a split Congress this year. That's our base case. The LPO research will still be split. S&P has been higher 10 years in a row when you have a split Congress, no matter who the president is, what side that is. So we think that's the base case. And it's almost like the best type of Washington is one that can't get anything done. That could be, you know, what'll be the end all be all and kind of help stocks continue to go higher regardless of who wins this thing.
Yeah, you had the data here, you know, going back to 1950 for the S&P and, you know, Democratic Congress, 10.7, Republican, 13.4, then split 17.2. So it's, you know, it's kind of that standstill that we'd love. Another one that I really want to look at because this is great to me. It shows the fastest corrections from all time highs in the NASDAQ. We just had one recently in September here earlier that started, I believe, on the 8th of September. Three days we went into a correction, which is a 10% pullback for everybody at home. And the last one we had was the one in February. And this is about 6 days to get there. But what I love about this, you go back to 1980, and the average return 3 months later, 5.3%, 6 months, 23.6%, and then 1 year, 26.7%. It shows how these corrections going back 40 years are great buying opportunities when they happen quickly like this. I mean, I feel like that's when the average person at home, Ryan, is selling. If they don't have an advisor like from LPL or somewhere helping them, they don't look at the history and numbers. They're selling into this, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's what we show there on the screen is, again, those are the fastest within less than 1 month. So it took less than 1 month from all-time high. And this one only took 3 days, so fastest ever. Another record for 2020. But, again, it's scary. Trust me, when we had that three-day correction and all the big tech names that everybody loves that are doing great all of a sudden come crashing back to earth, that was pretty scary. But then you look at the data and you see what the signals are from the data, and it suggests, again, kind of what we talked about in the very beginning, that these tech stocks are who got us here. Just because they pulled back significantly, that isn't by itself a reason to get out of them. And in fact, as this would suggest, maybe you want to use it as an opportunity to buy higher 1 year later, 9 out of 10 times. That's that's not the worst percentages in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, all we're doing here is we're playing percentages, right? I mean, you're looking at, trying to put as many chips of your favor in front of you. Nobody here has a crystal ball or can see the future. But, in history, I mean, you can argue and say it does repeat itself, it doesn't repeat itself. But the stock market, in my opinion, why technical analysis works is it's based on human emotions. And humans are acting the same way now as they did thousands of years ago. So we all act, we get greedy, we get fearful, we move in herds. So to be a contrarian and to see the stuff that you put out, Ryan, I love it. I mean, I can't wait till every morning to see if you put a new chart out. It's fantastic. So I want to thank you for all that damn work you're doing, because this is some great numbers you're sharing with people.
Well, Matt, thank you. And hopefully you can put up the chart that says all it took was a 50% rally. At the lows, the Economist had a cover that said close with the world. Okay, the world is closed. That was the lows. And then they have one almost a 60% rally, actually. They have one that literally says free money with the machine spitting out money. And that's right at the peak, okay, before this big correction we talked about. Are you kidding me? I mean, you talk about sentiment. I traded options for 11 years before I came in this side of the world. And there's one thing I learned about trading options. When everyone's on one side of the boat, the opportunity's on the other side, because everyone's looking at you. It's when people look at you like you're crazy when you give an opinion. That's when you might actually be onto something. And just the Economist with those two covers, boy, they nailed the lows. They nailed the recent peak as well. So, kind of unique how that happens time and time again throughout history.
But it goes back to, and I hate to bash the media because, I used to be part of the media, but you're selling what people want to hear at the time.
Right.
So when things are closed, you want to hear it. When things are closed and as bad as they were in March and nobody knew what was going to happen next, if you told them it was a great time to buy, people thought you were absolutely nuts. But I will tell you this, Ryan, I've run a money management firm, Penn Financial Group, for 16 years now. And typically in these types of pullbacks that we've had over the 16 years, I get clients calling scared, spooked, move me to cash. What was different this time, not only did the clients that I have call and say, Matt, what opportunities are out there in March? I had new clients coming to me saying, I want to get into the market now. And that actually scared me because I'm a contrarian. I think, most of the masses are usually wrong. Right. Did you see anything different about this time versus other pullbacks?
No, this one felt pretty scary. I mean, we've had 17,000 advisors, and a lot of them were very worried. And even at LPL, I mean, correction happened. We manage a lot of money. So the correction happened so fast, it's hard to do anything. But the last week of March, we upgraded our view on equities. We were even weight equities. We upgraded the overweight the last week of March, different models that we ran. We started moving money over, and people looked at us like we were a little crazy. I mean, in late March, we saw positives. Believe me, almost the biggest positive was everything was negative, right? If what's the Art Cashin quote? If it's the end of the world is coming, buy, because who's going to take the other side of the trade? That's kind of what it felt like the last week of March. And sure enough, fortunately, we upgraded our view and we added a good amount of equity exposure, and it's played out really well. And that's, again, that psychology of how markets work. It's an art, not a science. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But if you use the right data points over time, you can you just use those opportunities as an opportunity. When market pulls back 30%, you probably want to buy it. I mean, keep that real, real simple. History tells us stocks usually go up over every 20-year interval. Hey, stock market's the only place where things go on sale, yet everybody runs out of the store screaming. We saw that in March, and that's when things were on sale and you had some really good opportunities.
It's amazing how long-term investors turn into traders when the market pulls back. It's it's because, you know, you ask them, well, when are you pulling the money out? 20, 30 years? Well, there's no other place I could tell you to put that money for 20, 30 years. Nothing's guaranteed, but you have a pretty good odds that they're going to be much higher for the average American. You know, the average American is not buying commercial real estate or buying other things, starting businesses. So for the average American that ignores this, boy, it's sad. And I'm glad, you know, you had you on talking about this. But before we wrap it up, is there any last thoughts, anything that I forgot to ask you about that you want to get out there?
Oh, Joe Burrow is going to break the record for touchdown passes for a rookie, maybe. No, I mean, honestly, not really. I mean, I've got a blog, lplresearch.com. You can follow me on Twitter, at Ryan Dietrich. We have a podcast, LPL Market Signals, if you like any of the stuff I kind of just talked about. Those are three places you can go to kind of see what LPL Research is up to. But we work for 17,000 advisors, and there's no greater honor than to help, you know, our advisors, you know, kind of show what's going on in the world, but also to manage money for their clients when times are rough and times are scary. It's every day is different. That's what makes it fun, but also sometimes a little scary. But it's a blast.
Man, I thank you so much. And again, you know, thanks for getting on. We've been trying to get you on for a while. We'd love to have you back again sometime too. That maybe after the election, see if we were right, if it was a nice buying opportunity here or not. But actually, one more question. I mean, one more before I let you go. Is there? I know you guys are the big picture, but is there one sector or one technology that you're looking out longer term? Whether it be, you know, the big thing, electric vehicles, now it's going on, whether it be renewable energy. Is there anything that you're looking at LPO that you see as a big opportunity in the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, biotech. Biotech stocks literally went nowhere for like 5 years. And now we know what's going on with the pandemic, a lot of money going into them. But that's a really nice looking base. There's a lot of potential. When a group goes nowhere for 5 years and just breaks out with the tailwind of what's going on in the world right now, you know, healthcare, but biotech specifically is a group that we really think the next 5 years could really have some explosive gains.
Well, either we are the two smartest men in the world or we're going to make big mistakes, because in December, I came out with my outlook for 2020. I said, it's a year of biotech. So I was taking a little victory lap, you know, halfway through. And I said, you know what? I need to come out and change this. I said, it's the decade of biotech, because I agree. If you look at that chart of the NASDAQ biotech index going sideways, coiling for 5 years and finally breaks out in a year like this, my goodness, and the advances that are happening. And it's not about curing cancer. It's about just these little diseases. It's about CRISPR. It's about taking AI, machine learning, and melding with the drug discovery. I really, personalized medicine, precision medicine, I think the future of healthcare is about to be upended in the next 10 years. Like, we can't even imagine. I truly agree with you.
Yeah, real quick. I mean, my mom has stage 4 breast cancer, has been for 4.5 years. When she got stage 4 breast cancer 4.5 years, it was very scary going on. She had a growth recently, and they had to take that little piece out. You know, they sent it to Boston. They ran it through. This wasn't like this 5 years ago. They ran it through one of the biotechs in Boston. I don't know which one. They ran it through. There's 189 different types of breast cancer. They knew exactly what it was. They told her, you need to take this medicine, this medicine, this medicine. Wow. Okay? I mean, 20 years ago wasn't like that. 4.5 years ago when she first got this, it wasn't like that. You kind of take some chemo. You do this, you do that. You just kind of cross your fingers. Now they tested for 189 different types of breast cancer. I mean, that is great for, well, it's not great. You don't want to get cancer, but it's great if you're going to get sick. There's a lot of good things happening to help you stay alive. And she's a perfect example of it, but just that's a good, also a real world way of looking at, wow, these biotech names, stuff they're doing. This is unbelievable. And, again,
and it is real world. That's what you mentioned. Yeah. It affects all of us. You know, all of us have I know people, but I wish your mother the best. And man, oh man, I look forward to where the future brings us. And it's been a pleasure to talk to you. It's been a pleasure to talk to somebody else who's optimistic and believes in what we do. And I could tell your passion. You're truly passionate about this, which I love, Ryan. So thank you so much, Ryan Dietrich, LPO. We'll put up all your blog and podcast and Twitter feed so everybody can see you on here and follow him. Please follow him. I do. I think it's some of the best research you're ever going to get. So thank you so much, Ryan. Pleasure. And hold on. Wait a second. Good luck to your Bengals.
I will tell you,
as an Eagles fan, you know, I've almost given up on my team this year, but good luck to the Bengals. And we'll circle back in a couple years when we're both in a Super Bowl.
Okay. I can't wait. Sooner or later.
All right. Thanks, Ryan. Take care. All right. That was Ryan Dietrich that joined us from LPL Financial. I got to tell you, I mean, it's very rare to meet people in the industry where I'm just kind of blown away by them that, you know, maybe it's because he agrees with a lot that I agree with. I don't know. I mean, we all like to have, you know, people agree with each other or with us. But I love the optimism that he brings. I love the fact that he brings facts to the table. No axe to grind. They're trying to help out their advisors. Like you mentioned, I think he said he had 17,000 or so advisors that they have underneath their umbrella at LPL Financial. So one of the smartest guys when it comes to looking at charts, looking at the history of the stock market. And again, history may not always repeat itself, but it is extremely important. And because the market is driven by human emotions, we do see history repeat itself. And he mentioned a lot of great stats in there. And I can't wait to get him back on in a few months and see how things play out. But I agree with him that right now is a great buying opportunity, buying on pullbacks. And I think that the best way to do this over the long term is to be buying on pullbacks. If you're a long-term investor, which I'd say 99.9% of you are, use weakness to buy into strong companies. All right, so I'm going to wrap it up. Any comments, questions below? Anything for Ryan you want to put below there, put comments. I'll make sure he gets out to him. But subscribe, like to the podcast. And again, we'll be back Friday with our next one. But thank you so much for watching. And thanks again to Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist at LPL Research. Again, this is Matt McCall. That's
been your Moneyline. Thanks for listening to Moneyline with Matt McCall. Matt McCall. To find more information, head over to McCallMoneyWire.com. That's McCallMoneyWire.com.